Okay. So, well, first of all, I would like to thank the organizers for the invitation to come here and to present the work that we are doing. So I'm going to talk about the electronic correlations in multi-orbital systems and iron superconductors. And in particular, I'm going to talk about two issues. One is this issue of the Hund versus motor story, in particular, what's the reason of the separation of the quasi-particle wave with Hund's coupling. So this is a work that I'm doing with Laura Fanfarillo in Madrid. I think Laura is supposed to be here in a moment, I guess. And then I will also discuss a bit how the correlations are measured in optical conductivity experiments. And in particular, I will discuss issues regarding kinetic energy, interval transitions, and top independence. This is a work that I've done in collaboration with María José Calderón Belén Valenzuela from Madrid and with Luca from Grenoble. Well, so of course, from the very beginning, we were all interested in knowing how correlated are the iron superconductors overall after we saw this phase diagram that looks so similar to the one of cuprates. But while in both cases we have superconductivity emerging from an antiferromagnetic phase is suppressed, and when it's doped, whether with electron or with holes. So in iron superconductors, what it called our attention from the very beginning is the fact that the parent compounds are not mode insulators, but in general, that are metals. So the question whether this means whether the iron superconductors are not correlated. Already from early times, we knew that we could see bands in these materials, but that this didn't mean that there were no correlations at all. So in fact, there are mass enhancements that can go from two up to very large values depending on the compounds. There are even some chalcogenides, which are mode insulators. In general, so iron superconductors are correlated metals. The starting point of view to look at the correlations in iron-based superconductors is to have in mind that these systems are multi-orbital materials. So contrary to cuprates that have one electron in one orbital when they are doped, there are iron superconductors when we call the parent compounds, have compensated iron arsenic layers, and there are six electrons in five iron orbitals. So, well, so this has led to discussion on whether all the orbitals can be considered weakly correlated, essentially, whether we have to look at them as localized or whether some orbitals are more correlated than others. And we have to consider that some are localized and some itinerant. So we have a bit of that discussion the other day when we talk about magnetism. But there is another issue, which goes more to the nature of these correlations. And in particular, it appears the fact that due to the multi-orbital behavior, there is a new scale for correlation, which is the Hund's coupling. So let me remind you a bit about how this entered into the game. So if we just have a single orbital, and then we can consider the Hubbard model, where we are going to have just in the simplest, well, in the Hubbard model, in the simplest interacting case, a single interaction parameter that is going to be the intra-orbital repulsion. So if we look at the quasi-particle weight, so here I'm plotting the quasi-particle weight as a function of interaction and as a function of electronic filling, we see that close to, so well, we have the mode transition at half filling, and close to this mode transition, whether it is in interactions or in doping, we have a heavy electron. So I'm going to plot several, I'm going to have several color plots along the top. So keep in mind that whenever it's violet, it's going to be always a bad metallic heavy electron. So I'm going to use the same color codes for these color plots all the time. Now, in our multi-orbital system, we have a more complicated Hamiltonian in which, we are going to have intra-orbital repulsion, inter-orbital repulsion, the Hund's coupling, and the pair hopping. And even if we simplify, we do the approximation in such a way that not to have too many parameters, there are, in any case, going to be two parameters. One is the intra-orbital interactions. The other one is the Hund's coupling. Hund's coupling is going to enter both in the inter-orbital repulsion and in the tendency that is going to be smaller than the intra-orbital repulsion and in the tendency to align all the spins parallel. The first people who realized that Hund's coupling was playing a role in our superconductors was the group of Anisimov. Quite soon they were discovered, particularly mentioned that, if they just assume that Hund's coupling was zero, the quasi-particle weight that they got, it was quite high, so correlations seemed to be weak. But if they use the expected value of the Hund's coupling, correlation seems to be intermediate, but somehow the system didn't seem to be close to a mode transition because to increase the value of the intra-orbital interaction didn't drive the system to an insulated state. This idea was studied in more detail later by Howley and Kotlial, and in particular, they saw that the electrons, in fact, became heavier with increasing Hund's coupling. So you can see here this gamma that we have talked before in the terms of the constant for the specific heat as a function of the Hund's coupling. And you can see how this gamma, which is proportional to the mass of the electrons, increases. Since then, they coined the name Hund's metal to define this behavior. In particular, since then, there has been some work on that. So Hund metal have been described in the literature as strongly correlated metals with correlations driven by Hund's coupling, but in the systems in which the correlations are weakly dependent on U and the intra-orbital interactions, and they have been defined as systems which are not in close proximity to a Mott insulator. So somehow, and they are also different from Dock Mott insulators. Somehow, Hundness, the concept of Hundness, has been presented as opposite to Dockness.
It was a sharp definition of what distinction the physical properties have.
I'm going to go through this.
Just curiosity, right? So, in a way, it's very canonical. You can go back to, say, the 1970s, and people were back then interested in simple itinerant metals, itinerant ferromagnets like iron or cobalt or something. And also canonically assumed that there also the Hund's rule was important and the Hubbertian not so much. Has anybody tried to actually go back to the simple elemental transition metal metals to figure out how this Hundness works out?
What people have been doing is to try to understand first the generic behavior. You are going to see that I'm going to discuss a bit this also in generic models, not only for the iron superconductors. It's more to understand the effect of Hund's coupling in as a function of number of orbitals and filling. And in fact, the effect of Hund's coupling, it's very much dependent on which is you are going to see now how large. So which is your the filling of the electronic filling of the orbital. So there are regions in which Hund's coupling decreases correlations, and there are regions in which Hund's coupling increases correlations. And this is very much
attached. So we take iron metal. Very simple, right? There's far as I remember, there's different firm surfaces, and GDG and EGs are kind of different out there. I don't think that there's much of a mass enhancement in iron, for instance.
Actually, there are studies of, I think, the alpha phase of iron, in which the phenomenological model would imply that there are some localized electrons. And this comes out as a major effect on this carbon.
There was, for example, a paper by Erio Tosati, I think, about
exactly
that.
Exactly the same.
The question about description of physics terms. Modeness means localization of electrons. What Hoodness means?
This is a good question because I'm going to talk about that. And if you want, we discuss later what this means. Because this is essentially this question of Hoodness and Modeness. So far.
But there's one thing. Is it just electrons become heavy but not localized? They become diffusive and propagate diffusively?
It has been described more in terms of, I think that there has been quite mixed here. But the point is, normally correlation has been defined in terms of the quasi-particle weight. But somehow not been close to be real localized. Yeah.
But in some sense, if I may for a second. Referring to what Qingyao was asking, is it a matter of numbers or matter of or
concepts? I would say more qualitative concepts.
But concept of intermediate behavior, that if you keep increasing interaction, you will end up with more state.
You are going to see now let me answer you the question after because I think it's going to be much easier. Otherwise, I'm going to.
It's good to remember this issue.
So then essentially this has been the idea that has been said, and in particular, there have been several discussions, but for the case that I'm going to discuss, which are systems which are away from Hall-Fullin, there has been this proposal of the fact that this increase of correlations with Hund's coupling is associated to the reduction of the orbital degeneracy that is induced by Hund's coupling. So this was in fact said by Lucan collaborators. Now there is a completely different approach to correlations in iron superconductors that was proposed 5 years ago by Sheed and Leach, which in fact they said is that instead of taking the systems with six electrons with the as the parent compounds, one should take materials, so five electrons as the reference filling. And in this case, the iron superconductors will have 1.2 electrons per orbital on average. And this, in fact, drives an analogy between multiband iron nictides and the cuprates. So what he discussed is that when the filling is changed, when we approach five electrons, so we expect the system to be more correlated because we are approaching the mode insulator at Hall-Fullin. Here let me emphasize that with Hund's coupling, the critical interactions for a mode transition at Hall-Fullin becomes much smaller than the one at other commensurate fillings. Initially, he proposed that this region here, that there is a region here which has a non-Fermi liquid behavior as we approach this molten state. This was, the idea is that there were some frozen spins. This came from some early work by Nilis and Werner in a similar system with three orbitals and finite Hund. Now we know after the work by Luca that there is In fact, this region, it's fairly liquid, but it has a very small quasi-particle weight.
Lenny, I think, at least in the Werner work, it was degenerate orbitals.
Yeah, these ones are degenerate orbitals. Yeah, these ones are also degenerate orbitals.
So I think to make a distinction between n equals 5 and n equals 6, degeneracy versus non-degeneracy.
You're going to see later that it's which are the differences. So here, this is for iron superconductors, but in principle, the idea was that the point is that the physics, the underlying physics, was similar. So this is three orbitals, and it's a function of n. So they propose that there is a region with frozen moment as the system is closer to half the length.
Say that this point I think was well taken, but it was guided by the results of degenerate orbitals.
Yeah. Okay. Later I will also go to the orbital differentiation.
There's also a question of energy resolution in the matrix. This study of Werner was done with Monte Carlo, so finite temperature, and so I think that this region of frozen moment is actually the high temperature phase above a very heavy thermal.
Yeah.
And so, yes, indeed, the Leach work was guided by this. And he also uses a method that, I mean, it's ED with five orbitals, so it doesn't really have the resolution to resolve the heavy masses in the close to the Muppets. Yeah. So he sees, basically, I think, the high temperature phase, which is probably anomalous.
Yeah.
I agree with you. Yeah.
So now we know that this is, in fact, a Fermi liquid, so there is a finite quasi-particle weight, but very small. So if you're
just historically, I mean, you will find the first of this in my thesis written in 1986, right? If they simple go to simple oxides, you find out that the Mach gap out there in manganese oxide is very large, and iron oxide it sort of jumps down and it goes up again. And just because manganese oxide is D5, it has hard-filled shells, very stable, Reynolds excitations are multiplex that cost a lot of JH.
Yeah.
Right, and of course you find all
the basically, if you do the simple calculation of the atomic spectrum, you see.
Yeah, in my case, it's 1986.
Yeah.
And your half field, it goes up with JH, and in all your cases, it's half.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
and
Rick.
When Z factor gets smaller, where does the spectral weight goes?
To Hubbard bands, like. But they are very broad in general, so there have been not so many studies that I know, but in general, they are kind of broader, and then it's not that you have these very, the Hubbard bands don't have the width equal to the bandwidth, let's say. You have some kind of very broad thing.
But when you talk about small z, over what range of frequencies that small z spreads? Is
so
the whole band that acquires small z and the spectral wave goes to even higher end?
So let's say if you, for example, have the generator orbitals, so the idea is that, your small z, what it's doing is enhancing your, it's enhancing the mass, so your band is becoming much, much narrower. So
z is for the whole band?
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, and the spectral wave that goes...
Yeah, that goes in a wide range of frequency. What happens in this system with Hund's couplings is that there are a lot of excited states with different energies. It's not just having single occupied state or double occupied state. So you can have a lot of multiplates with different spin configurations.
Sure, but it just plot a spectral function. When you're saying it's spread over...
Yeah, but so I think, as far as I know, this has been studied in very few cases, and I think that how this appears is going to be very dependent on doping and on...
This is already in the band picture, not in the orbital. All these complicated features, they appear in the band picture, because then you have already the mixture of violence.
Okay, let's say, so here, this is for a system in which you have mixing of the orbitals are hybridized, so then this you do the DMFT to the LDA band structure, so and then you calculate all the spectral function. Okay, so it's not really that you say this is orbital picture or band picture, you have everything there. In this case, so your orbital don't mix.
I guess the question was, if you do measurements, if you look at measured spectral weight, the spectral weight is reduced over some width of the band.
The quasi-particle spectral weight, it is. You will have some, again, some continuum, some incoherence.
This effect is a band picture because you have, if you measure, you measure over the band.
Yeah, okay, so you refer like band versus atomic.
Versus orbital. You can do the orbital resolution of the band.
Okay.
And then look to the spectral weight result in orbitals. And then probably the features will be different. But these broad features, I think, is exactly because of the mixing due to the
I'm just asking about what you measure.
So far, what I'm talking about is theory. Yeah. Okay. Now, one of the predictions of this idea of this theory is that there is one effect, a very large, a very important electron hole asymmetry. So one effect that if we start from six electrons and one dose with holes, we are going towards the Mohs insulator, while if one starts from six electrons and one goes towards without electrons, so we are going away from the Mohs insulating state, and the system will be less less correlated. And in fact, we have been already in the conference, we have been both experimental and theoretical evidences that this seems to be happening in the iron superconductors. Now, the question is that if we look at these two points of view to describe the iron superconductors, somehow they look opposite. So somehow, if here we have iron nictides are described as Hund metals, where Mohs physics seems to have nothing to do. So somehow they have been described like being not being in proximity to a Mohs insulator and not being and having correlations weakly dependent on U and properties essentially different to a Mohs insulator. Well, in these other pictures, the essential origin of the correlations is the proximity to a Mohs insulator. So then what I'm going to do, I'm going to try to clarify whether there are inconsistencies or not inconsistencies. And so I'm going to try to clarify this picture a bit.
I just comment. I mean, I think if you go beyond the words of Hund's metal, the substance of all statements has really no distinction in a sense that even in this, if you have a combined phase diagram, a Hund's coupling, interaction, there's always a line which separates the fully localized region.
That is what I'm going to show, but what I'm going to show in fact is that because of that, so is that.
I have nothing against what you're going to say, but all that I would say is that the notion of Hund's metals have been, in my mind, propagated as something that's entirely different based on. Descriptions, based on words which are sort of vague representations.
In fact, I agree. I think that there is this is in fact happening. Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
So I this is a bit the message that I'm going to say that this is not
because localization. Localization.
This is not the right thing.
Whether microscopically it comes from Hund's coupling.
So somehow the point is that what I think is that this has happened. It has been discuss more also in terms of kind of orbital correlations and things like that. But I think that there has been some mixing of
Sorry,
behaviors in the.
Right, but this was precisely the question, I think, but the question is, are what's called Hund metals comes as precursors to Mohs insulator, maybe in a wide region?
Okay.
Or have a different physics because spectral weight is just spread over.
The answer is former.
The best thing I'm going to say is that it's deformed. So it's this is just a precursor.
Sorry, can I also add?
Yeah.
So non-perfect liquid here means what?
Sorry, this is what I mean is that this is the when this theory was, or this model was proposed, they believed they didn't manage to reach low enough temperatures, and they saw something that looked like frozen moments. But now this is Fermi liquid, and it has a very small quasi-particle weight. Okay, so then what I'm going to present is some calculations in degenerate multi-orbital systems in which we have an electron. 5 minutes? That's, there have been a lot of questions already.
Okay.
So, and then, well, there have been. Okay, so with n orbitals and then n small electrons, and half filling is going to be n small equal to n. So then these, all these orbitals are going to be equivalent, and so I have the two interaction parameters. So what we are doing is calculations with a slab spin, and then the what I'm going to look at is the quasi-particle weight. So then, well, the message to take home from here is that, well, here, in fact, the correlation depends. We cannot say this is just Hund and it's not you. So the correlation depends on both on Hund's coupling and on you. And that this strong suppression of the quasi-particle weight with Hund's coupling is, in fact, due to the proximity to a mod insulator in Hund. So then that this, the picture we have to have in mind is the, that one of the top mod insulator. Okay. So then you can see here calculations for three orbitals. I'm going to show calculations for 3 and 5 orbitals. You can see here, these are this is plots of the quasi-particle weight as a function of for a given number of electrons. So this is for half field, 2 electrons and 1 electron. So you see in all cases that there is a mod transition, but that the gap of this mod transition depends on the critical interaction for the mode transition depends strongly on you in a very non-trivial way. So this was well understood in terms of the change of the atomic gap with Hund's coupling and the reduction of the orbital degeneracy. So this is.
In these models, it doesn't matter which orbitals we're talking about.
Sorry, is that all the orbitals are degenerate and are equivalent, and there is no hybridization between the orbitals. So the value of the quasi-particle weight is the same in all of them.
About the same. And in calculation, do we allow the quasi-particle weight to be frequency?
No.
So it's just number.
Yeah. So you can see here that there is a region with a small quasi-particle weight. There is, so it has a large mass and it's far from the mode transition. So this is the region we are going to be interested in. And so this appears similar in even in much stronger way in the case of 6 electrons in 5 orbitals. Mm-hmm. Now, so in order to clarify how this is linked to the doping or to the value of interactions, so I'm going to look at the quasi-particle weight for different values of the doping. And you can see that this bad metal, so here I say again that violet means bad metal, this bad metal region, this region with a small quasi-particle weight, is very much linked to the doping and, in fact, to the proximity of Hund filling. Yeah.
Let me put a question. So some of your diagrams, for example, this third one on the right hand side, seems to show some kind of reentrant behavior. Sorry, right? Right. So
yeah.
Do you understand why?
Yeah. So yeah, it's it can be understood. So here, in fact, is that so there are somehow one has to define two different regions. There is a region in which Hund's coupling makes interaction stronger, and that is. It's somehow associated to orbital, to the reduction of orbital degeneracy here. And what I'm going to say, is in most part, is due to the proximity to a mod insulator. But what you see here is that is the fact that if you are out of half-filling, the atomic gap, so what is the cost in energy to have to have a state in which you are not in the mode state, let's say you have two electrons, the cause of not having all the atoms with two electrons, but to switch to have chain between have one with one and another one with three. Okay, so the atom, this is what is called the atomic gap of for adding for changing.
I'm trying to understand. There are two electrons in three orbitals.
Yes.
So naively, if you put each electron in one orbital, you're not paying on site Hubbard U, you're only paying U prime. So then the Hund's rule just tells you, okay, you want the spins to be parallel to each other. Yeah. So then
U prime depends on JH.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I'm
so
that.
What
so,
I'm saying is.
Oh, that's what happens. So U prime effectively becomes smaller when you tune J Hund's.
Right, we have been
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, so I see. Okay, yeah. So it's sort of indirect effect. It's only because U prime is not an independent parameter.
Exactly. So, okay, so then.
So,
yeah.
So, do you look for the healing ladders? So, for three orbitals, do you look for the healing 4 and 5? And do you have this particle hole symmetry?
In this model, it's particle hole symmetric. So, this is already in the model because all the orbitals are equivalent to the journey. Okay, so then what you can see here is clearly is that, so here the bad metallicity is very much associated to, associated to doping. And it's clearly depends on whom and on you. So you can see here, for example, to see how it depends on J, on this is whom, sorry, and this is you. So these are the derivatives of this plot. You can see very clearly that the region where this depends on whom's coupling, the region in which the quasi particle weight depends on whom's couplings or on you, are the same region. And they are clearly linked to the behavior of half-filling. So then you can see here much more clearly the behavior. So here I'm doing a cut here at this interaction, which is equal to the bandwidth. And what I'm changing here is the number of electrons. And here you can see, well, how exactly the bad metallic behavior starts from half filling. This is for a different case. Here we have five orbitals and four electrons. And you can see here once again that this suppression that it's observed of the quasi-particle weight with Hund's coupling is directly related to the proximity to a Mott insulation state. Okay, so then I think that it's this story of the Hund metal, I think, has to be is now clarified that here the interactions in iron superconductors have to be understood for more associated to the proximity to a Mott insulator in doping. Okay. So then iron superconductors have to be described as top Mott insulators. So then this is what we expect. For a system with six electrons in five degenerate orbitals. So then this is more or less the kind of behavior that we can expect for a quasi-particle, so for our system, if we dope with holes. Or if we dope with holes, quasi-particle weight is going to decrease. If we dope with electrons, it's going to increase.
May I ask this question? Yeah. Let's say 5.5, which is the best in my class. Quasi-particle weight in this picture is 0.1.
Uh-huh.
If you try to look at the spectral function of the spectral,
the question is,
that spectral function will show you something that will resemble quasi-particle weight, or it will be nothing.
With the slightest spin, you don't. So I think you cannot get a good spectral function. But with DMFT,
I'm talking about DMFT. You take what you calculate. Yeah. You calculate spectral function, and then compare with what Wager Arcus gives for this material. And they claim that they can see dispersion.
Yeah, it's that you can see dispersion.
To 0.1. Can you see anything?
Okay, so let's say you're going to see now that there are another ingredient in the iron superconductors, which is the orbital dependence.
Okay.
Okay.
Coherent
part.
Yeah. Here you only get the quasi-particle wave.
Right. But what I'm asking is normally we're used to think that when quasi-particle z is 0.1, you don't see anything.
Yeah.
It's not self-energy.
No, it's
a renormalization factor. Is that the enhancement of the mass?
Okay, but you have to distinguish the method from
yeah.
The
physics.
So the method here is going to give you one number in front of your hoping, and that's a very very well-defined quantity. Then she doesn't. I mean, in this method we don't actually calculate the spectral function because away from that number, the method doesn't give you any information.
Yeah.
So in the end of t, of course, there will be a problem of resolution and the actual temperature is in consideration. So, which is some kind of, it will reduce the reality when you have a very small
gravity. But look, I think Andre's question is a good one, and the spectral function information is included.
I thought the point of Andre's question was not to compare directly the model to the artist necessarily, but he wanted to get a sense of whether z equals 0.1 is too small or is it too large or is it reasonable.
Well, I think, for example, in real life, what you are going to see is orbital differentiations. And in fact, you have some compounds that, for example, you observe the gammas that we have discussed before are like 10 times larger than expected. So this is something already that you observe, or you observe in quantum oscillations. And in Arcus, there have been also some...
quantum oscillations that are affecting mass. Mass of quasi-particles on the further surface.
Exactly. You are going to have, a quasi-particle at the Fermi surface. But you just have to go, the point is that you have to go to low enough temperatures. Because otherwise, so what happens is that your coherent temperature is going to be very small.
Maybe I can reformulate the question this way, partly is also give that. Does the theory have a predictive power with respect to spectral function? Can you just out of your theory tell us what the spectral function is?
Just with a slight spin, you cannot. You can get with a slight spin, you can get.
Yeah. Just add a short comment. So, not for the potassium ion to arsenic 2, which would be very interesting, but for the FE, the potassium ion selenides, FETSE, and single layers, we've done the calculation for dispersions and compared with the exchange in these experiments. So, part of the effort has been.
But what you say is for the bands, like you take all this and you get some bands.
No, you have dispersion. You can compare with the dispersion.
With the dispersion you have, but with the spectral function, I understand that you want only have bands.
No, you can.
Right?
The information is there too. You know, spectral spin calculation.
So I think it's spectral function in the bed metal is vegetable. Nothing you can extract from it. If metal becomes better, then you start seeing peaks, and from the peaks you can extract dispersion.
You still have the peaks. Yeah. You just have to go to low enough temperatures. Okay, so now, so what I wanted to emphasize is that here in the iron superconductors, so there is orbital differentiation, and so this is the starting point that I'm going to have now to discuss some effects on the way in which correlations are discussed and in optical conductivity and what one can expect. So now what is going to be crucial in this discussion is, the systems are multiband, the correlations are orbital dependent, and that the correlations are enhanced with Hall-Mock.
This is now a new kind of calculation.
This is going to be a slight spin, but I'm going to calculate. This is for iron superconductors, non-degenerate orbitals. I'm going back. So because there has been the discussion. So now I go back to iron superconductors, Then we have the full type and the model in our superconductors, and we are going to look at the optical conductivity.
Did you compute this beyond the slave approximation?
Okay, you say the optical conductivity.
Yeah.
I'm going to say that now. Okay.
Yeah.
So, in principle, in the optical conductivity, we expect to have through the peak the interband transitions.
Stop playing my computer.
The coherence and the coupling to bosons. The way that and what I'm going to expect with correlations is that the through the peak is going to be suppressed as compared to LDA calculations. The interband transitions are going to move to lower energies, and the coherent spectral wave is going to be reduced. The way we are going to calculate that is what we are going to do is we are going to get a renormalized Hamiltonian from the slave spin. I'm not going to have the incoherence part in this calculation, just the renormalized bands, okay?
What gets you the incoherent of optical response?
That is what I'm going to tell you. I'm not going to have this incoherence part, and I'm not going to have the coupling to the bosons, but what I'm going to have is the suppression of the through the peak. I'm going to have how the interband transitions move to lower energies and how the coherence part of the interband transition goes also to, is reduced. We don't have information on the scattering rate, so the features are going to appear sharper than in real life. So this is the type of behavior that we obtain, and in fact is consistent with what one expects. So this is for a case for an undoped iron superconductor. This is for a hold-up iron superconductor with 5.5. Here we are assuming virtual crystal approximation, which means that there are no, we don't modify our bands.
Me?
Yeah.
Just a legal question. What gives the width of?
We just put a finite gamma.
So
yeah.
It is there.
Yeah, but this
is independent on people.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. So then, what we observe is as expected that the through the peak is decreased as with hold up in and the bands move to lower energies and the spectral wave decreases. But in fact, what I want to discuss more is some issues in how correlations are discussed from experiments and compared with what we can obtain from the calculations. So this is more or less how the optical conductivity appear in the normal state. So you see that, well, there is a clear low energy peak, which is through the light. And here, this part, I think in this region, we can safely associate at least most part to interband transitions. The question is, it starts to be on this plateau that you observe here. And in fact, well, experimentalists don't have very clear what this plateau is. In fact, if you look to different groups, so they are fitting it in very different ways. Some people use one through the component and one interband transition at 0.1 electron volt. Some people use two through the component and one oscillator, two through the components and interband transitions at different energies, or even they have some interband transitions at very small energies.
And you mind if what's the scale related to magnitude of the span from home? Just at what frequency is the signal drops below 1 meter?
I think it's 1,000 and 100.
Just
1,100 centimeters minus one.
After the neo transition.
Yeah, so if you look at the previous picture,
it's more or less here.
So right in the what we call flat region.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
So the way in which people have been determining the correlations, one is with these two through the components, Already here, you can see that when they do this through the components, there are many groups doing this. This way through the component, they have scattering mean free path, which is a smaller. Well, they associate this way through the component to localize electrons, but they have a mean free path effect, which is smaller than the lattice constant. So clearly, these are not, itinerant electrons, but I think that to use it through the component for such a situation, it's already meaningless. But what I want to note now is that you can see here this plateau, which is associated to incoherence. I have told you that we didn't have incoherence. We have here, so this plateau. And in fact, what you see here is that if we follow here this line, this is the line for the interband transitions. Here, this plateau is coming partially from this interband transition, which is telling us that already in this kind of discussion, they have interband transitions there, which are not included. The other way in the other way in which correlations have been studied have been assuming that there is one, just one through the model that can be fit to some with some frequency dependent generalized through the model and obtain some frequency dependent scattering rates or enhancements of the mass, and also integrating this through the peak. And in fact, this famous picture that we have seen so many times, it was on integrating the through the peak. So normally what people do is they integrate up to a given cutoff, which is in this picture in particular, and it's the value that are used currently. It was 3,000 centimeters minus one, or in some cases 1,500 centimeters minus one. I think this is what gives the error bar. And so here there are two, and they told us that looking at how the through the wave is suppressed, we can measure the renormalization of the kinetic energy. For that, they assume a Fermi liquid description. So here there are two issues. One is how relevant are the interband transitions in this region. The other issue is whether one is measuring here the renormalization of the kinetic energy. So we have looked, assuming this Fermi liquid-like description, we have calculated the kinetic energy, and we have calculated the suppression of the through the peak. So you can see that the suppression of the through the peak and the suppression of the kinetic energy are not equal. And I'm emphasizing that this is in a Fermi liquid description, because otherwise this description that they gave could not be already valid, because here they assume that the kinetic energy of a MOTS insulator is zero, and it is not.
And how do you find kinetic energy?
Here what we have done is we take our renormalized Hamiltonian, once we include the correlations, and we just calculate the average. Yeah. So now, if one can go easily through the equations of the through the peak, and what is essential here, what I find here that is especially interesting, is that the fact that these two quantities are not equal is due to the orbital differentiation. So if all the orbitals will have the same quasi-particle weight, this description, at least at the Fermi liquid level, will be valid. But so it's the orbital differentiation which is characteristic of these materials which makes that this is not valid. So in fact, so my understanding of this is that what we observe with the through the weight is the orbitals which are at the Fermi surface. And in fact here, even the lighter orbitals at the Fermi surface, but with the kinetic energy, we somehow have an average of all the orbitals which are partially filled.
Lenny, I think it still sets a lower bound.
Sorry?
The experimental measure suppression provides the lower bound of the suppression of the...
Of the, well, but yeah, you're going to say now, it's the lower bound, it's already, they are including...
it's a qualitative measure.
Yeah, but then at some point you are going to see that this has to, one has to be careful with this now with the interval transitions.
Question about your calculation. Since you put some gamma dumping by hand and you integrate in finite window, what happens if you change your gamma?
We have done two values for different. You say here? Here, this is my calculations. I have done them exactly this one from the real expression, not integrating the spectral weight. I'm going to integrate the spectral weight now. But so of course, if one has a very wide one.
The generalization of the Drude, you mean the width of the Drude goes down, so the
calculations you can have, so in the expressions, you can have it with, as a delta peak, and I just compute the factor. So I have expressions for that. Yeah, I can calculate that without necessity of integrating.
You have the function and you calculate the weight.
Yeah.
Let me just ask, because we're getting close to
12. I have one transparency less.
Yes.
Okay. So this is the other message I wanted to give. It's related to the contribution of the interband transitions. The issue of how relevant are interband transitions have been around for a while, but so far there were no realistic estimates of how large is this contribution. So the only estimates that have been around have been some estimates by Lilia Boeri and Larva Infatto, or also for our previous calculations, which have been done with unrenormalized bands. If you look at how you know that how important are interband transitions, you see that they are there. So there are interband transitions already at low energy, but it seems that the contribution was quite small. Now, once you add the correlations, we have seen that the interband transitions move to lower energies and that the Drude peak is suppressed. So what we have calculated here, and this is integrating up to a finite cutoff, this is not doing with the delta, we have calculated the spectral weight. We have separated the, we here just have the coherent spectral weight. We have separated the spectral weight that comes from Drude from the spectral weight that comes from interband transition. And we have looked at the fraction of the total spectral weight that comes from the interband transition as a function of doping. So this is undoped. So we see that for an undoped compound, this is of the order of 20%. But what I want to emphasize is that if one goes to hold-up samples, this interband transition contribution just becomes dominant. And so this is overall associated. This is associated to a larger contribution of interband transitions, but also to a strong suppression of the coherent spectral weight. So, I think that this really makes us to be careful with all these ways that people is using for getting correlations in iron superconductors from optical conductivity, and especially as we go, as we dope with holes. So I think that this really becomes completely meaningless. Okay, so thank you.
Yeah, so just to come back to the first half of your talk.
To the first part?
So let me just... It's fine, just go
no,
on.
Keep the
summary
slide.
Okay.
The holes versus Marth and the doping dependence. I think, we are in general agreement, but there's one point which I want to emphasize, which is that a few years ago when Ron Yu and I first did this non-degenerate orbital calculations, the surprise we found was that even though the total number of electrons is 6, so it's away from half-filling for 5 orbitals, If you look at the key orbitals, meaning the dxy, dxz, dyz orbitals, they are actually very close to half-filling of a wide range of U and Hund scaffolding. So that suggested to me that the emphasis of distinction between n equals 6 and n equals 5, the total number of electrons in the 5 3D orbitals, may not be that important to make, in a sense that the three most important orbitals, even for n equals 6, is already close to half filling. So one should really think of even that regime as already in the proximity to the mark.
But it's coming from, so they are more correlated, that's clearly, this is, you can't see here, this is what you say. This is the value of the quasiparticle weight.
The quasiparticle weight is only looking low energy. The filling is more interesting from the perspective of proximity to Mach, right? Because that integrates out the also not only the coherent but also the incoherent spectral weight.
Yeah, but for example, the proximity it's important. You can see, for example, that the values of the of the gamma or the values of or that randomization that you see in ARPES, this increases a lot when you dot with holes. And this is so even if these ones are closer, it's clearly that these ones are more localized than the other ones. Yeah. So I absolutely agree.
Yeah.
But the proximity to half filling to n equal 5, it's important. So this is clearly important.
I think we should discuss further, but I'm making a general point that even at N6, one shouldn't really think of as 20% doping. Because the different orbits are different.
That is the general picture, but I have also so emphasized that here in the ionic side, the orbital differentiation is important. Is that so? I plan to emphasize in a slide where I had quite a few questions, and then I somehow went it a bit farther. For sure, orbital differentiation is very important in ionic sites. And in fact, for example, the other day in the discussion on magnetism, so what I pointed is that in this region, more strongly correlated, what we get is a behavior that that looks like we have some orbitals which behave as localized and some orbitals which behave as itinerant. So,
if I can build up on what you said, I think we all agree that orbital differentiation is very important, and so you see it both in the quasi-particle weights, which are different, and the filling, which is different. However, in your, and this was sort of predicted in our period of 2009, in which you really isolate just the key effects, which are the splitting of the crystal phase that bring a few orbitals closer to half filling. Now, in your very same paper, if you take the realistic value of the interaction that you have taken for the 1111, and you move it up, you would find, you show that you wouldn't find any one of those orbitals going Mach insulating up to a very, very high energy. So up to 12 electron volts, there would no one of those, even for
these
that they are, they wouldn't become Mach insulating. However, the key effect for me is the doping, in the sense that the orbitals which are very close to our filling, you just move a little bit the crystal filling, you bring them to our filling, and whatever value of U, and then you will have them Mach insulating. That's why one puts the accent on the Mach insulator at half filling rather than the Mach insulator.
Exactly.
Let's do many body theory and not think
it's a total confusion. No, when you are at half filling, you make the all electrons of TG and EG at the same time. I didn't mean to initiate the discussion, which is this extensive. But all that I want to say is that we're arguing the details, but I think that we should be careful with the notion of half filling in settings when the orbitals are different.
Yeah, great. Look, obviously people have things to say, so let me just say that anyone who would like to go to lunch is allowed to do so without any prejudice. So we can